on the dark streets of Denver.
She broke down in a very dangerous part of town.
There's an epidemic of evil.
The fear was incredible. She was like a cow being herded down the road.
Dead girls posed by the roadside.
This is his horrific art that you're looking at.
A killer still on the hunt.
Whoever killed can do it again.
But can an eyewitness account finally stop him?
It was a look of pure evil.
I'm M. William Phelps, investigative journalist, and I have an obsession. Serial killer, cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something the cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer.
I started killing again and again. I saw it as a purpose.
Because he is one. I'm in Colorado, on the outskirts of Denver. Just a few clicks east of Mile High City. Arapahoe County. It's remote. Rural. Fields of crops for miles. But out here, when night falls and the moon rises, darkness takes hold. And a predator wakes up. All around me, there's nothing for miles. Now imagine a 15-year-old girl running down this road in the darkness. It's freezing. She's naked. An engine is revving. The headlights are coming. She knows she can't escape them. She knows her own fate. What I want to know is, who the hell is behind that wheel? Who else did he kill? Between 1975 and 1995, dozens of young women are snatched from Denver streets, strangled to death, then thrown away outside the city limits. Corpses litter country roadsides and fields. 20 years of terror. An average of 2 bodies a year. Naked and violated. Dumped in the fields. Many cases went cold years ago. Where do I even start? It really is like finding a needle in a haystack. Could all these deaths be the work of just one killer? Or is it more complicated than that? See, there are patterns in some of the killings, but not others. And that frustrates everyone close to the investigation.
It just boggles my mind that this case hasn't been solved, that someone who caused so much destruction has never been made accountable. Whoever killed can do it again.
This is Kirk Mitchell, a crime reporter with the Denver Post. He's been writing about these girls for too long. Kirk tells me police have zeroed in on 4 murders. 4 victims who may offer clues to the identity of their killer. August 17, 1978. Even at 15, Kim Graben was already a drifter at heart.
Kimberly Graben, she was a runaway. She'd been staying at a youth home because she'd been running away from home several times. She was kind of off the grid. She was kind of hopscotching from place to place, and she was taking chances on who she met and spent time with.
Kimberly Graben had been running all her life. She just didn't realize that this time she'd be running for her life. Kim Graben is victim number one.
What's that over there?
She's found the very next morning.
She was partially clothed. Her body was manipulated like a mannequin. She was posed. She was posed in a way that would be shocking to police.
But this is no one-off. Over the years, this strange MO is repeated four times with four victims.
In each of the four cases, the women were strangled to death and left nude. Young girls were posed like mannequins. Legs were spread wide apart in a shocking manner.
I'm used to the sick ways of serial killers, but this, I just can't get my head around. Why pose the bodies? Why spread their legs? What does it all mean?
That's this man's signature, Matthew. That's his emotional signature that he can't erase.
John Kelly is a criminal profiler and my partner in crime.
I believe the signature is what connects these four girls. He's throwing them off the side of the road like they're garbage. The posing also is very, very shameful. It's very degrading. It's like he's spitting in society's face, if you will.
Kelly's right. It's not just about the kill for this guy. He's trying to make a statement. But what's he trying to say? I don't speak killer, but I know someone who does. Another guy who spat in society's face and earned himself life behind bars. My serial killer on the inside, codename Raven.
Hello?
Raven, why would a serial killer pose a body on the side of the road?
We're talking to public. When we pose a victim in a certain way, there's a shock value that we leave behind.
So you want some guy with his wife and his two kids to roll up on this scene and then to look over and say, oh my God, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's a shock value. We're not hiding the body. We're actually presenting it in a position where it'd be the most disgusting for the public.
I get what Raven's telling me. The killer's got an ego, a hunger for publicity, notoriety, an up-and-comer carving out a name for himself. But see, the more he reveals, the closer we get to catching him.
This guy is some type of artist. This is his horrific art that you're looking at.
I'm just outside Denver, Colorado. The great outdoors. But like most cities, it's got a dark side. Between 1975 and 1995, dozens of young girls have been murdered. But four in particular seem linked by a killer's twisted MO. The bodies of these four victims were found posed like mannequins, posed for shock value. It worked. The way these bodies were posed makes my blood boil, makes me sick to my stomach. Naked, some of them with their legs spread apart, left here out in the open for anyone to drive by and see. This guy needs to be caught. This son of a bitch needs to be stopped. So how does this guy choose his victims? Meet him at a party, then follow them home? Or just drive by and pick him up? Is he a hunter or a collector? The first victim was a hitchhiker, but they weren't all engaged in high-risk behavior. For some, it was just a matter of wrong place, wrong time. In 1987, young Caroline Walker had just turned 18.
Caroline was very special. She had green eyes, dark hair, and she was just a very pretty girl.
I'm meeting with Claudine Walker, Caroline's mom. She remembers her daughter the way she was, a beautiful child and a champion gymnast.
She took to gymnastics like a duck takes to water. She was quite a sports person. I used to call her my little Komenichi. And she says, "Oh, Mom, I'm not that good." And I says, "To me, you are." Sometimes I'd get on her case to clean her room and she was out there tumbling.
Bye, Mom. Oh, sweetheart. I'm gonna be late. Be careful. Remember, 12 o'clock.
I know.
July 3rd, 1987. Caroline Walker meets her boyfriend Greg for a drink after work.
Greg, I'm trying to drive.
But Greg has one drink too many, and she has to drop him home in his car.
Her mother was very strict. She had rules. She had a curfew. And Carolyn was anxious to get home before the curfew.
A kiss goodbye, and Caroline hurries home.
Greg, I've got to go. Mom's gonna kill me.
Her curfew hour was 12:30, and she was always on time. It's kind of strange. Of all the kids, she was the only one that I was so paranoid at not ever going anywhere by herself. She asked me, "Mom, don't you trust me?" She says, "You never let me go anywhere by myself." And I told her, "I can't explain that. I just have this feeling that you shouldn't ever, ever be by yourself."
But that night, Caroline Walker was by herself. And all of a sudden, fate comes knocking.
The car was a bit of a clunker, and it broke down on her in a very dangerous part of town, just south of Colfax Avenue, this area. A lot of the girls were last seen alive.
Caroline stranded and alone, but not for long.
And about 11:30, I woke up. I was terrified. I looked towards the front room and the light was still on.
Thanks for stopping.
And I thought, well, she's not home yet.
Let's get off the road, you steer.
I just felt like I was terrified. I felt like my hair was standing on end. And I was pacing. 12:30 came. She wasn't there. And I paced, and no Caroline.
Now, most people, when they see a young girl having mechanical problems, they want to stop and help. You need a hand? Can I call someone? Do you want me to look under the hood? And that's what should have happened for Caroline Walker. That's what you'd want to believe would happen for your daughter. But not this time. Caroline was innocent. She trusted people. But someone took advantage of that trust. Twenty-four hours after Caroline was last seen, her mom reports her missing. Not much later, the police pull up outside Claudine's house.
My youngest son says, "Mom, there's a whole bunch of men and police walking up this yard." And all I could think of is, do you know, did you find her? Is she okay? And one of the detectives just kind of paused a little bit, and he says, "We did find her." I said, "Is she okay?" And he said, "No, she's dead." And I started screaming at him. I told him he was mistaken. But that wasn't so. I'd give anything if I could go back and even just get one more hug. But I can't.
Caroline's body was found on July 5th, 1987, at 1 p.m.
When I first saw her, I said, this person's been posed. She was not just simply dumped there.
Detective Marv Brandt was at the Walker crime scene. The autopsy revealed she'd been beaten, strangled, and sexually assaulted.
She was found lying completely naked with her feet up towards the road, her hands and arms pulled behind her, and her legs were spread, and no clothes were found anywhere.
And he wanted the public to see her, if you will.
Exactly. He wanted somebody to see her and shock that person. A person that does this is proud of what he's done.
So here's this guy. He drives along these backcountry roads. He chooses a spot, and he dumps the body. But he also poses the body. Why does he pose the body? To degrade that victim one last time. But also to show those cops how superior he is. So we know this guy wants to shock. Why? Well, John Kelly's got a theory. It's about notoriety and a very twisted take on a public performance.
It's the posing that's his signature. Art is in the eye of the beholder. This guy is some type of artist, if you will. This is his art. This is his horrific art that you're looking at.
But why use women as a canvas?
He has unbelievable hate towards younger women.
That tells me that at some point in time, this man was probably made fun of, hurt in some way, rejected, if you will. by younger girls.
Hell, I've been rejected plenty of times by plenty of women. A quick Florida vacation usually healed those wounds. But this killer doesn't forget, doesn't forgive. He's only just getting warmed up.
The fear was incredible. She was like a cow being herded down the road.
October 28, 1980, 4 a.m. Winter is coming in Colorado. It's so cold that you could freeze to death.
Temperature that night was around 10 degrees. I can imagine that the fear was incredible. She was like a cow being herded down the road. She walked 4 miles naked with no shoes on a gravel road.
The victim is only 15. Stephanie Bauman. Terrorized. Tortured.
I think she was begging this person, let me back in, let me back in the car. I'll do what you want. She was eventually strangled and laid into the ditch.
Marv Brandt was working homicide at the time of Stephanie Bauman's murder. These are the actual photos from the crime scene.
Her body was found in Arapahoe County, south of Byers, Colorado. She was found nude. She was posed. Her legs were spread and her arms were pulled up.
A brutal game of cat and mouse. But this mouse, she was only a kid.
Stephanie Bauman was 15 years old, brunette hair, blue eyes, freckles. She's a young teenager, beautiful child, but just had some hard knocks in her life that got her off track. And she started taking chances in her life that she shouldn't have.
Stephanie Bauman had been mixing with the wrong crowd. Just a kid trying to find her way in a world she wasn't ready for. I'm looking at this murder and I'm thinking, this is a whole other level of anger. Another level of rage. And all that rage focused on innocent young women.
Raven, how would you describe his attitude toward women in general?
He sees them as an object, something to play with. I can envision him driving in a car, chasing this victim across some grain field. And he'd be laughing behind the steering wheel, watching her run away from him until she couldn't run no more. The victim has hope that she will succeed in getting away. And that's what he tries for.
And he's getting enjoyment out of that.
Total enjoyment out of it. Knowing full well the end result is that she's gonna die.
Trust Raven to know exactly how the killer thinks. I guess it takes one to know one. I think we can all agree that this Denver guy is a sadist. Raging violence, zero empathy. And an imagination for cruelty that knows no limits. I got a picture developing in my mind about him, and he's all fantasy driven. It's all about taking the girls out in the middle of nowhere and watching them suffer. That's what drives him.
When you're strangling somebody, you're staring right in their eyes. whoever was killing these young women really enjoyed that, the terror in their eyes. He derived some kind of pleasure from that.
She's looking into the eyes of evil. She's looking at the devil. This is a very sadistic man. This is a psychopath who hates young girls and who gets immense pleasure out of watching them suffer. He pushes her up against the barbed wire fence. He knows the pain that that's inflicting on her. Then he gives her the opportunity to run again and chase her some more. This is a very bold, sadistic, psychopathic killer.
I know of a bold, sadistic, psychopathic killer named Vincent Groves. Does he fit into this?
This guy Groves was also a sadist, one of Colorado's worst serial killers. And he was active at the same time. He's dead now, but with DNA testing, they still keep tying him to cold cases. Some think he killed as many as 24 women. He's a person of interest in the murders we're looking at. His MO was strangulation, just like our four cases. But in other ways, he doesn't fit.
We can see similarities in the strangulations. We can look at the time frame.
What are the differences?
Totally different hunting styles. Vincent Groves is hunting on the most vulnerable population, which is prostitutes. Show him a $20 bill, you're gonna get a girl in the car. She's probably strung out on dope, and she's desperate. She needs the money, so she's gonna go with anybody. She's a serial killer's perfect victim. I don't see posing as part of Vincent Groves' ritual. But with this other serial killer, I see him posing each and every victim.
He's saying, ha, 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 look at my work.
Look at my work in your face. Literally, in your face.
Whereas Vincent Groves is just using these women, degrading them, murdering them, and just dumping them like garbage.
Exactly. Vincent Groves is only interested in the power to control the kill and the degradation of the woman by dumping her as a piece of garbage.
Did Vincent Groves kill these four girls?
I do not believe he did.
Any one of them?
No, I do not believe he did at this point, no.
So Kelly's certain Groves isn't our guy. But some cops I've talked to aren't so sure. Forget the needle. We can't even find the haystack. Cases like these, decades old, are never clear-cut. We gotta catch a break. Something to help move the case forward. A killer this sadistic can't stay on the streets.
This guy's beyond violent. And you know what? He got a thrill out of it. Is he smart? I don't think so. Impulsive? Absolutely. My question is, when will he slip up? Or has he already? Do you believe she saw the killer?
I personally believe she did, yes.
In Denver, dozens of cold cases. Dead girls, daughters, sisters. The work of one killer? Probably not. But four victims seem linked. Kim Graben, Caroline Walker, Steph Bauman, and 18-year-old Donna Sue Wayne. In the early hours of July 14th, 1986, Donna Sue Wayne is out partying.
She had been seen at several parties in North Denver. She liked to associate with people that were partying type people, liked to do drugs, liked to drink.
last drinks. Donna Sue is seen leaving with some Latino men, men that have never been identified. Her friends never hear from her again.
She was originally reported missing to the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office.
Steve Connor is a detective with the Aurora Police Department. He was working a pair of unsolved murders when he got a call from Detective Marv Brandt.
Investigator Brandt from the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office brought to my attention two that they were working and how similar they were to two that I had been working. The people we're looking at, they weren't prostitutes, but they were high-risk victims.
Donna Sue Wayne was missing for a month before they found her.
Her body was skeletonized. She was discovered in kind of an illegal dumping site.
Donna Sue was thrown away in a pile of trash and left to decompose. Now, this is a key difference, because the other girls were displayed near roadsides, not hidden away.
She wasn't expected to be found right away.
Marv Brandt was at the crime scene.
When I got there, they were taking the body away, and there was not too much left of her remains that were identifiable.
Although police can't recognize the body as being Donna Sue Wayne, they do recognize something else right away.
Her legs were spread apart. However, it was undetermined why she was killed.
Despite having little to work with, and despite the fact that Donna Sue was found buried in a pile of trash, the posing leads investigators to tie this murder to the other three.
There's no physical evidence, trace fiber, fingerprints, none of that connects. It's the similarity in the homicide occurring somewhere else and the body being posed at a specific location.
I gotta tell you, I'm not surprised they still haven't caught this guy. Nothing is straightforward. There are patterns, but then also exceptions. Three girls he poses in places where they'll be found easily. But Donna Sue Wayne, he hides in a garbage dump. She isn't found for a month. As for the kills, three girls he murders elsewhere, then transports the bodies. But with Bauman, he chases her with his car and leaves her where he kills her. It just doesn't add up. Maybe that's because it's the work of more than one killer.
Kelly, could it be more than one guy? Because I'm not sold on the idea that we're looking at one serial killer for these four girls.
You know, that possibility is always out there, but I don't believe that it's more than one guy.
But you have some of the girls dumped in open areas. One of the girls is dumped in a dump, right? And not found for a long time.
I believe it's the same guy because these bodies were found in a pretty small area, right? So if we could say that, we'd have to believe that he feels comfortable taking them to this area.
I hear what he's saying. Bodies keep showing up in the backyard. You better knock down the front door. That's what I love about Kelly. He backs his instincts. But how about someone with killer instincts? Raven.
Let's assume this guy lives locally. Where would you go looking for him?
Maybe he lives close by. I think he'd probably hang out at a local cafe where he could flirt with the waitresses and enjoy their company. He's gonna stay within his comfort zone.
And his comfort zone is local, right?
Yeah, it's gonna be completely local. This guy's not gonna move. He's still there. He's still watching.
So it's two against one. Kelly and Raven both think it's one guy. One killer for these four girls. But what about the variation in the MO? Serials usually have a consistent pattern,
but it can't evolve. Something made this guy change his game.
That leads me to believe there's some kind of substance abuse involved. His plan has been messed up. He has lost some control, and I believe he's ingested some kind of drug.
Why would a serial killer do that? I thought the addiction was murder. That's what you're always telling me.
The addiction is murder, but don't forget, if he's using substance, eventually he's gonna start to lose control. He's gonna start to get sloppy. He's gonna start to make mistakes.
And that's something Kelly and I can agree on 100%, because he did slip up. On the night he murdered Donna Sue Wayne, someone looked him right in the eyes.
The only way to describe it was a look of pure evil.
In the summer of 1986, 18-year-old Donna Sue Wayne disappears. She's found a month later, buried in a pile of trash. Police have no idea what happened to her. Till one day they get a call from someone who says she saw something.
You know, one of the reasons why I do this show is so people can come forward with new information. Maybe you heard something. Maybe you know something. Entire cases can be solved with one eyewitness account. And with Donna Sue Wayne, a witness has come forward. And you know what? To this very day, she's still shattered by what she's seen.
I've been granted an interview on the condition she remains anonymous. After almost 30 years, she still fears for her life.
It was the middle of July, and I was on my way to work. Must have been about 5:15 in the morning. I see a car driving erratically. I assumed that it was someone that was just drunk. As they got closer, they pulled back and blocked both lanes of the road. So the only way for me to get around him is to go behind him down into the ditch and back up again.
And when you go behind him, you come up on the passenger side of his car.
And that's where I see her with the door flown open.
Hey, what is she doing?
She's saying, help me, pleading for what she knew was her life at that time. I'm certain of that. And he pulled her back in. He was covered with sweat. He didn't have a shirt on. He was mid-20s to 30s. His hair, sort of a dirty blonde color.
Did he look at you?
He saw me. Very clearly, he saw me, yes. The only way to describe it was a look of pure evil, pure evil.
What do you think you saw that morning?
I think I saw a murder in progress.
In the days before cell phones, our eyewitness had to find the nearest house before she could call 911. When the cops get there, they don't find anything. They start thinking there could be a simpler explanation.
They suggest to me that it's probably just a domestic dispute. And I am adamantly telling them that it's not just a domestic dispute.
You're certain of it?
I'm certain of it. There was no doubt in my mind that this girl's life was in danger.
So for a long time, you don't know what happens to this girl.
A month went by, and I saw a little blurb in the newspaper saying, body found, and I called the Aurora police and said, I believe I was the last person to see this girl alive.
Turns out, our eyewitness was right. She saw Donna Sue Wayne pleading for her life. sentenced to death by a man with eyes of pure evil. Eyes that stared right back at her.
The detective suggested that I should not take that same route to work ever again, because the gentleman clearly had seen me, and he continued on to still murder this girl.
Right. So why do this interview for you anonymously?
Well, I do it anonymously because I do know that the guy is out there. And I don't think he's far away.
Wow.
And I think he's the type that's a braggart.
Ah.
I really believe that he's told other people if other people haven't been involved with him. And I think eventually that'll catch him.
I mean, he knew that an eyewitness, you, saw him, looked in his eyes, yet he still murdered that girl.
That's right.
So that says something about him.
That's right. That's what I mean. Very cocky person. And I guess the more time that goes by, the cockier one becomes. I mean, so I have to believe in my mind, I think, that he will eventually be caught.
Do you think he's still out there?
Yes.
Do you think he's still hurting people?
Yes.
There are over 1,500 unsolved homicides in the state of Colorado. Each one of those involves a victim. Here in Aurora, in Denver, we're focusing on four cases. That's four victims. I just spoke to an eyewitness. You know what? That's victim number five. Because she suffered her entire life. No one saw Raven going about his deadly business. No one who lived to tell the tale, anyway.
I interviewed this witness, and she is damn sure what she saw. She saw evil in that guy's eyes. So what would you say about that?
She probably felt there was evil in the air when she saw that. She probably felt it when this guy looked over at her. That this guy was peering down into her soul. If she stayed around, that she was going to be next. I think this guy is very bold in what he does. He knows the area where he's working. He knows what he's doing. He kills people. This guy is very confident.
You're looking at a very bold serial killer. She's reaching out to this woman, please help me, please help me. This guy reaches over, wraps his arm around her, and whips her back into the car. Where are you going, honey? You're coming with me. We have a date with death.
Despite her fear, our witness got a good look at the suspect. He was Caucasian, in his late 20s, with blonde hair. At the time, there wasn't enough evidence to make an arrest. But times have changed. I'm told there's a late-breaking development. Police are hopeful this could lead to an arrest in the case of Donna Sue Wayne.
There is a person of high interest that we are looking at, and I'm unable to discuss that at this time.
Any physical evidence that you can discuss from the four cases we've talked about?
No, I can't. Donna Wayne was with people that partied, and she was seen at this bar.
So you think it's someone in her circle?
I think so, yes.
A degenerate in her circle?
Yes. That's my personal opinion.
Well, that makes sense. See, I was never sure that Donna Sue fit with the other three. But that still leaves a serial killer on the loose. The man who murdered the other three women.
I'm thinking about this guy and what is going to be his demise. And I think it's his own narcissism. He thinks he's too damn smart. But you know what? Science is going to catch him. And I'm told they're real close right now. And when that day happens, he'll be wearing metal bracelets and locked up where his ass belongs.
To make this happen, it's vital that others come forward. Step up, like our eyewitness did. Who were these Latino men that Donna Sue left the bar with? They gotta know something. Any piece of new information could help lead to an arrest. If you know a sadistic person that lived in the Denver-Aurora area between 1975 and 1995, do your duty and call local police.
And if you have a piece of information that could solve one of these crimes, why not come forward? Whoever did this has destroyed many lives. And nobody was held accountable. Why would be most meaningful for me is to see that person brought to justice.
But there's no amount of justice that can ever replace the loss of a beautiful young daughter.
When the kids were little, they would get mad if I looked at her picture. So I'd wait till they were gone, then I'd do my crying. There was times I would get on the floor and pound on the floor and cry as loud as I could. That's when I would hear her. She'd say, "Mom, don't cry. I'm still with you." And those are the things that got me through it. I'm sorry. It was an honor and a privilege to have known her.